If you've missed a show, the full audio library is at RadioMD.com. And now back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Dr. Deborah Serrani is an expert on a variety of psychological issues. She's a share care expert for Dr. Oz. She writes for Psychology Today, among many other publications, and has worked as a technical advisor for the NBC television show Law and Order Special Victims Unit. And she's a licensed psychologist in practice for over 20 years. Her book is called Depression and Your Child, A Guide for Parents and Caregivers. It's published by Roman and Littlefield Publishing Group. Welcome to the show. At what age in a youngster's life, what's the earliest age that someone can experience depression?
Very good question. And believe it or not, we actually see depression in babies. So as young as just a couple of months old, we can start detecting this disorder.
A couple of months and you can detect that? How are you able to do that? That's pretty interesting.
Well, you know, up to 1 out of 40 babies, a study has shown that 1 out of 40 babies can develop the illness of depression. And the way that we see that, as we do in most children, is through a lot of behavioral symptoms. Depressed babies have poor eye tracking. Their reflexes are very slow. Their cries are not as robust. And, you know, these are babies who've been cleared and checked for any kind of medical reason. So, you know, they can kind of fall into a depressive state if perhaps their caregivers aren't attuned to their needs. And basically what we're really saying is that we're pre-wired genetically, many of us, for mood disorders. And it can be detected very young, and if we can interrupt the trajectory of the disorder, there's great room for healing and for a life of great hope.
That's excellent. And here is Dr. Mike Roizen. Dr. Mike.
Now, this started, Dr. Deborah, and we should say your website is Dr. Deborah Serrani, and let's spell that for people. It is D-R... Is there a punctuation with a period there?
No, just serrani.com.
So it's Dr. D-R-D-E-B-O-R-A-H-S-E-R-A-N-I.com for book Depression and Your Child.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, I'd say to send us your email questions, and the best question would get a book. For some reason today, I cannot get my udocs@gmail system working, so I apologize for that. We won't be doing that, but we will. We have a couple questions that were emailed in advance. But I'm more interested in, you said as early as 2 months, how much do you think that depression is playing in the use of more drugs in children? I read an article recently that more than 10% of boys in grade school are now getting stimulants of one form or another to treat ADHD or ADD or behavioral problems. How much of that is acting out relating to depression? Is there any data we have on it, Deborah?
Well, I'm not very familiar with the component of ADHD and depression, but I will say that most kids who are taking any type of prescribed medication do run the risk for having a higher incidence of anxiety and depression. So it sounds like that study in a ballpark figure about 10% may be spot on in saying that we do see an uptick in kids who struggle with a secondary or a secondary issue in a mental health way, like with anxiety or depression.
And you list anxiety and depression together. Are they forms of the? Do they both have the same origination, or are they different? And in other words, are these really very different diseases, and we just link them because it's something that isn't normal mentally, or are they related to one another?
They do have different structures. Those of us who are hardwired for anxiety disorders, and there are those of us who are hardwired for mood disorders, but there is an interplay between the two. About 15 to 20% of those who have depression will also have an anxiety component. And similarly, those who struggle with depression can also have an anxiety component with it as well. So that's why a lot of the SSRIs and SSNIs kind of try to address both of those issues, but they are quite different in their genetic and neurobiological underpinnings.
Now, what is the usual age? I heard that you can diagnose this as early as 2 months. What's the usual age this comes to for, and how does it present? How should parents try and find out, hey, my child has a problem with this, and we can get help and help them? And I assume, and you're going to have to tell me this again, but is that right? The reason to intervene or the reason to make the diagnosis is intervening does make a difference in the child and family's life.
That's right. It does, Dr. Mike. I think most kids who get diagnosed with depression tend to be in their teenage years, but we do see a significant amount when they enter the standard school program. So about 4% of preschool-age children and 5% of school-age children meet the criteria for depression. So there are a number of ways for parents to keep an eye out for this, four very basic ways, which is to look at behavioral changes, physical changes, emotional changes, and cognitive changes. And I can elaborate on that if you like. And to make sure
Let's go and talk first about the four ways. So physical changes, go ahead and let's go through the four different ways. And we may run into the break and come back, but it's such an important problem. That is, one of the questions we got was, how do I know if my child's depressed or acting out? Or is it just that my child wants to try drugs and that's why he's acting depressed or reticent or goes into his room when I don't give him permission?
Well, the answer to that question is duration. We want to see these consistently different kinds of behaviors at least 2 weeks in duration, not just here and there. And these four areas really break down quite nicely, which is any behavioral change that's sudden where your child is restless or withdraws or is clingy or isolates. And this isn't something that happens, you know, like I said, here and there. This is something that's almost predictable, almost a structured behavioral change that almost feels out of the ordinary for your child. And most children, unlike adults, present with a lot of physical symptoms of depression. They don't have the language skills to express their textures of their emotions. So sometimes we see kids with a lot of stomach aches, headaches, lethargy, fatigue. Sometimes they don't eat well, or they don't sleep well, or they're eating too much, or they're sleeping too much. So again, this physical change, you need to see it for a long duration. The emotional changes of sadness, loss of interest. Many kids report feeling bored. They don't really understand how to express that feeling. So they'll say things like, I just don't feel good, I'm bored, I'm tired. And then, of course, we look at cognitive changes, one of the most serious of all. This is when negative thinking comes into play. Kids will say that they're stupid or I'm not smart or you'd be better off without me. They have great difficulty focusing and concentrating. And this is because the neurobiology of depression has kind of seized their little bodies in these four particular areas.
Deborah, we're going to have to take a break now. And we're talking with Dr. Deborah Serrani. Dr. Deborah Serrani, depression and your child. Joe?
This is Radio MD. Thanks for listening. Stay well.
Is your skin aging before your eyes? There is something you can do to reverse those signs of aging. I'm plastic surgeon Dr. Arthur Perry, and my solution doesn't involve a knife or a needle. It's a serum I created called Nighttime. Nighttime makes your skin smoother, brighter, and thicker with just one step each day. I've packed Nighttime with vitamins C and A, moisturizers, fruit acids, skin brighteners, and antioxidants. That's a lot of science in one bottle. But that's what it takes to make your skin look younger and more attractive. Until Labor Day, when you purchase two bottles of Nighttime, you'll get a third bottle free with free shipping. Call 855-940-1800. That's 855-940-1800, or on the web, it's drperrys.com. That's drperrys.com. Put the word Radio MD in the discount box to receive three bottles of Nighttime for the price of two.
Sometimes people buy cookies as a gift for us to send to our soldiers. They tell us it reminds them of home.
Emily is one of thousands of Girl Scouts who will send cookies to troops stationed overseas.
Children shouldn't have to take abuse because they aren't strong enough to escape it. I want to give them a helping hand.
Alicia uses proceeds from her cookie sales to provide mentoring programs at a shelter in her community.
Selling Girl Scout cookies has taught me how to manage money, be responsible, and talk to other people.
Tanya wants to go to business school and hopes to run her own company someday.
On a visit to the food bank, I learned that in this economy, more and more people need help to feed their families.
Morgan and other Girl Scouts are starting a project to help get food to those who need it most. Every Girl Scout cookie has a mission: to help girls do great things. Find your cookies now at GirlScoutCookies.org.